This is the Canadian Tax Podcast, episode number 2, hosted by me, Cameron Ware. Good morning. Happy Monday. It is the week of March 8th, 2021, and here are some things you should know for this week. The 2020 T1 filing deadlines. At the moment, this is still April 30th, but if you've received any of the CERB or CRB, basically any COVID support stuff, and your gross income is under $75,000 for the year, then technically on any balances due, you have no interest payable on those amounts until April 30th, 2022. So in other words, if you owe taxes at the end of April, whenever you file rather, if you have a balance due and you've received CERB or any type of COVID support, you don't have to pay that. Or rather, if you take your time paying it, you won't be charged interest on the balance due up until April 30th of next year, 2022. It's not that you don't have to pay it. It's that it's just interest-free on whatever balance is due. Having said that, watch for late filing penalties. The filing deadline is still April 30th. Just because you don't have to make your payments and pay off the full balance by then, or by April 30th, you still have to file prior to April 30th. Now, if you're self-employed, filing deadline, June 15th at the moment, CRA hasn't changed that. But of course, if you have a balance due, it needs to be paid by April 30th. Otherwise, you'll pay interest on it. Having said that, if you're a self-employed person who has also received CERB during the year, then you'll be able to you won't have any interest charge on any balance that was due post April 30th. Speaking of CERB, next item on my list here, there are presently some issues with incorrect T4As for CERB and CRB being sent out. Two specific problems. One is repayments made by taxpayers who had, let's say you received CERB and you decided, hey, you know, it looks like I wasn't eligible for it. I need to repay it. And you went and made your repayments. There are a lot of T4As coming out from Service Canada and CRA that do not show this repayment. Separately, I've also seen ones where tax installments, specifically tax installments, have instead been coded as CERB repayments. Problem two is probably we'll call this an even bigger headache, is fraud. There are people out there who have gone to do their taxes and realized, hey, there's a T4A issued in my name for CERB, but I never actually took CERB. So what is the deal with that? That is a much bigger problem, and we're going to have some issues with that. Now, we haven't received any guidance from CRA on this yet. Basically, what the approach that we're taking around here, hold off. I'm expecting to get guidance in the next week or two from CRA on this issue. It's too big a problem for them to ignore. So I think there's going to be some sort of official explanation or official approach that you're supposed to take in these cases. Realistically, I mean, if you want to deal with this stuff right now, I would say you need to just wait. I mean, we have until April 30th to file. Wait for CRA to issue some guidance. Don't be in a rush to file your stuff. Most likely matching, CRA's matching program is going to pick up the issue and say, well, wait a minute, you say you don't have a T4A here, we say you do. The robots might just say, well, this is a problem. So what would be ideal? Wait for the amended T4As to be sent out. Whether that's going to happen by April 30th or not, we will see. It is government. I don't have a lot of faith, but, you know, sometimes they'll surprise. So moving on, lastly, this time of year, we usually expect to see a federal budget released by Ottawa. 2019, release date for the budget was March 19th. Last year, the budget was tabled to be released for March 30th, but just never happened. So at the moment, Globe and Mail just published an article. Said they chatted with a senior official, whatever that means. And yeah, feds are saying no, it's certainly no budget release for March and likely nothing for April either, which means we have basically gone about 2 years without a budget now. I won't comment too much other than to say it's going to be interesting if and when we finally get some numbers and see just how bad situation we are in with all the COVID support and all that type of programs. It's going to be interesting from a tax perspective just to see what kind of a hole there is to dig out of and what programs they're going to implement to deal with it. So moving on, had some questions this week. First one, a guy wrote in, he said he's selling a rental property. There's no tenant in the building any longer, so he's looking at just selling and getting rid of it. Since the tenant has left, they repainted and redid the roof. And he wants to know how these expenses get claimed. Is it when the work is done or in the year that the building is sold and then you deduct those things? So what's awkward here is, just jump right in, technically these aren't expenses. These are improvements or betterments, if you want to get really technical and start looking into IFRS stuff, the technical textbook things. Point being, you don't get a 100% deduction on these. These are equivalent of a fixed asset addition. They are prolonging the life of the asset. So with that in mind, you take depreciation expense, or for tax purposes, you're going to take capital cost allowance on this, and you deduct a certain percentage per year and on a declining balance method. So the point is, you don't get 100% deduction for these. You get to depreciate it over time, a certain percentage per year. And to that point, when do you get to claim them? Every year. They are done when you file your tax return for the year. So I hope that answers that one. If not, just give me a shout and I can go over it in a bit more detail here. Next one, individual is a self-employed individual and shopping around for mortgage pre-approval right now. And his question was, should he show a bit more income in terms of, for self-employed income, should he show higher income, but also deal with the associated higher tax payable on higher income? Or should he maximize his tax write-offs, likely show a lower income, and then deal with probably a higher mortgage rate because he doesn't have as high a personal income figure? So if that just made your eyes start to roll and you say, what the heck are you talking about? Easiest thing to, or just a really quick example here, quick and easy example. The previous question, we talked about taking capital cost allowance. So depreciation on equipment, tools, buildings, that kind of thing. So if you're a self-employed individual, you're going to have some depreciation expense. You don't have to claim depreciation. The states you do, fun fact, but up here it's at your discretion. So by not claiming, say, capital cost allowance for the year, yeah, you're going to give up a bit in taxes, but you'll also show a higher income for purposes of the mortgage application. So whether or not you should do it, that is, it's a tricky question. The technical side basically comes down to, what are you foregoing in terms of paying extra taxes by, we'll call it, artificially keeping your income high for filing purposes? What is the tax impact of that versus, or rather, what is the increased tax expense to you versus the your best guess at whatever interest rate you're going to get? What you're trying to do is figure out, is the tax hit going to be higher than the interest rate hit? Typically, when we're talking about mortgage and mortgage values, things like that, it's likely that the interest rate is going to be the one that you want to have lower, as opposed to paying some extra taxes up front. Now, having said all of that, realistically, my short answer here is, it's going to come down to your banker. If your banker is a switched on individual and knows how to read a financial statement or self-employed income, deal with that kind of stuff, it shouldn't matter. You should be able to still file for the most tax efficient, or, you know, pay the least amount of tax. You should be able to take that approach and at the same time still get the same mortgage rates that you would normally get. A lot of times, whether it's the mortgage broker or the bank or whatever, a guy who knows what he's doing will know to add back a lot of that, we'll call it non-cash items or one-off things like that. They'll normalize your income. But having said that, I mean, big five banks, I don't have a lot of faith in those guys to know what they're doing. In my opinion, they're salesmen first and foremost, not we'll call them business people. So it's sort of one of those things, you know, do you make things simple for them and show a bit more income and you'll fit nicely inside their little box, or do you gamble and have them do you gamble on them having a bit of a brain and know what they're doing? And if you have a really good relationship with your banker and they're fairly switched on, know what they're doing, I would say definitely maximize your deductions, pay the least amount of tax that you have to, but also go for the lowest mortgage rates that you can. So moving on, lastly, the really quick and simple one, but it's come up a few times going into this year's tax season. I'm just going to read this word for word. Say I put $6,000 in January into stocks and options, and at the end of the year, I wind up with $1 million. Since all of this is within my TFSA, then it should mean that the $1 million profit shouldn't be taxable at all, right? And yeah, short answer is yeah. If you make a whole bunch of gains or income in your tax-free savings account, any income earned in that is tax-free. Now, again, realistically, you make $1 million in that account, CRA is probably going to ask questions. Not a bad thing. You would be correct and you'd have no issues, but expect to be queried by CRA in terms of them possibly following up and saying, hey, where'd you make all of that money? Now, lastly, we're going to do what I'm calling the interesting question of the week. Here's a good one. I'm just going to read this one straight off my paper here. So going from a nice $1,300 return to a minus $1,400 return after adding in my EI T4E, what gives? My God, GAWD. So what's happened here is this individual is saying, hey, before they plugged in some slips, he had a $1,300 tax refund. And after he plugged in his T4E EI slip, he or she owed $1,400 and is apparently quite upset about that and wants to know what's going on there. Well, easiest way to think of it, your T4E is no different than a regular T4. It is income, full stop. So you get that slip, you include it in income. What's a bit different is the T4E withholding rates, or rather the tax remittances that are done on your behalf at source, they're typically really, really, really low on T4EI stuff, just because they are assuming, the issuer, basically Government of Canada, is assuming that you're not working. So they're not taking into consideration if you might be in a higher tax bracket or anything like that. They are just deducting at a very small level. So when you take your T4E slip and combine it with everything else, it's likely that the withholdings that were done for the year are not enough. Separately, there might be some issues with T4E repayments, but without seeing the numbers, I can only guess. So with that, I think we will wrap things up. This was Canadian Tax Podcast. Thanks for listening. This commentary is for general informational purposes only and deals with complicated and time-sensitive info that may not apply to your situation. Tax rules are always changing, and this information may not be current. Tax is complicated. This information is not tax advice. Don't rely on this info to make tax decisions. Hire a professional to help you. For more info, see canadiantaxpodcast.ca/disclaimer.